All right, we'll go ahead and get started then. So thanks for everyone for coming today. I know it's a busy time as campuses reopen. So we appreciate your attention. So thanks. All right, so just a reminder that we rescheduled the CASL or the Collaborating Across SUNY Libraries workshop with Galadriel Chilton. That's now going to take place later in September with a synchronous workshop on the 28th. A small $35 fee. If anyone has any need for a waiver within reason, we can work with you. Just reach out to us. So just know that that's coming up in late September, and try to put it on your calendars. So she's going to be talking about or focusing on collaboration and project management across the consortia to look at how we can focus more on collaborative projects. She has a lot of experience with things that we, I think aspire to do. Just a quick update on this with the new SUNY deal. We've talked about this a few times, but it's not necessarily something that is widely distributed. But there is a 10% APC discount as part of our new SUNY deal. A few of us in SUNY sysadmin are doing the verification. Elsevier requires that we verify that authors who say that they're from your institution are actually affiliated with your institution. Right now, we've verified five in the last week from a variety of institutions. And if we have any questions at this point, we're reaching out to directors. If there's a lack of clarity of whether we should verify a faculty or an affiliated staff or not, we should also be getting aggregate and institutional data about what faculty are publishing in Elsevier journals and which ones are going through an APC or which ones are using the subscription model, and we're figuring out how we can best share this data that isn't confusing. But we just got a lot of different workflow issues ironed out with Elsevier. They had to create an entirely different version of their open access platform for us to do the verification, because we don't centralize APC payments or author affiliation, those types of things like other consortia they work with. So we're just getting started with the actual live verifications, and expect to hear some more about this as we move forward. And we're going to keep an eye on how much we have to engage with campuses on this, and we may be asking for primary contacts for APC verification in the future if we find that it's something that we need. But if we don't need to do that very often, then we'll just figure it out internally who to reach out to. So another piece of vendor management update. So we had our August Ex Libris support management meeting last week, and we've managed to continue to get someone from the content team to show up to work with us on content issues. One of the things that we discussed is just overall responsiveness and time to resolution on content cases. And we asked about how do we work with Ex Libris during the time where they're acknowledging that they're backlogged with content cases to get things that are really problematic, either from an institution level or groups of institutions. And they indicated that a high priority won't be enough to get their to get this escalated to be quick to resolution. So What we agreed upon and discussed with the content representative is if there is a content issue that you're working on, that's been a problem, and it's been a few weeks, you know, this has to be something that you set a high priority to, because they do look at priority still. But if this is a high priority, you're waiting a couple of weeks, it's impacting users, it's a broad issue, then use the escalation for content. And I put a link here on the escalation, and you, in essence, send an email to say, please escalate this issue. Then that gets up above a high level. We don't want to overuse this because, you know, obviously that's just going to create another backlog in the escalated cases, but that is the path that we're recommending, and Ex Libris recommends that you take if you have content cases that that aren't getting the traction that you want. They're having a widespread effect on users, usability, and you want to get some more attention. Obviously, Ex Libris is working to improve their turnaround on content cases, but they acknowledge that that's not going to be fast enough to really meet the needs that we have to fix linking issues or content issues quickly. So we talked a lot about a CDI / Prima View online issue, and where titles were matching, and if an ISSN is missing, that the title match has to be exact or else that will fail. That was a small group of content cases that we had. And we talked a lot about that because we tried to group some content cases together to make it easier for them. But, you know, what they, and this has been successful as we work with Alma Primo support, if we group cases together, because usually there is a common or a similar root cause, and it seems that content is much different, where they prefer that we don't group cases because of the complexity of the CDI and, you know, a lot of the CZ records as well, that that it really is a item by item review that they have to do, because there might be some slight difference that is causing the issue. Still working through other CDI issues like facets, and we're trying to figure out how we are more helpful with supplementing the CZ, and this is something that has come up a few times where a SUNY reaches out to a publisher. The publisher might provide the records or say, yeah, submit a case on my behalf, and then it goes into publisher relations or some other status, and it gets kind of backlogged in content. And we were saying, like, is this at all useful? How do we fast track this? And, you know, it seems like they're asking us not to be a go-between, because they can't really verify that the records that we're providing match up exactly to the CZ. So it does have to go into that larger provider relations hopper, so to speak. So just know that, you know, if you're trying to do that facilitation, it's definitely, you know, something that I think we're all trying to be helpful, but that's something that if it goes into provider relations, that Ex Libris or Progress will want to work directly with the publisher. Not that they don't trust you, but there's a lot of complexity with the different collections that the provider provides or the publisher provides, and the representative that you're working with might not have provided you the right records. And we know that the layout has been an issue, and we're working to get more information on that. And we're happy that the rollout has been pushed back to November on the layout, or the new layout. So we're reviewing that as well. Just a quick update on where the SUNY Library Accessibility Cohort stands. So we're finishing up the professional development portion of that cohort, and now we're going to start working on, we're developing the process for reviewing VPATs, reviewing the actual product, and trying to figure out how that links into and making sure that we have good connections into the rest of the processes that accessibility reviewing and compliance connects to. One of the things that I've been working with Nazli Kirchian on and in council is for us to deem all library content is not high impact EIT. So you might all hear that and say, well, I don't agree with that. We are high impact. That's not exactly what we're saying as far as broadly. What we're focusing on is high impact EIT as exemplified by what the procurement policies with the new accessibility policies from SUNY are focused on. So in that, the high impact EIT requires an external review before before you can purchase or renew. And that I think would put a really large burden on SUNY libraries at this point. And we don't think that library content like databases that really does that they fit the high impact EIT, which means that you can't matriculate, you can't do anything as a student without access to this resource. We know that library content is important, but it just doesn't fit that criteria of not being able to actually do anything as a student. We're working on getting that finalized, and it seems that everyone's on the same page. We just need to, you know, of course, the devil is in the communication here to make sure that gets broadly communicated as well. If that has become or is becoming an issue on your campus, let me know and we can plug in the right people to have that conversation. Any questions on that? All right. We've been working on this for a while, and it's taken a little bit longer because we've gone through multiple security reviews with iTech on this, and you know, we're thankful that they're doing that because those reviews would be going on at the local level with IT as well. So after that, we're doing a rollout of 5 campuses sometime next week with the self-check Alma application. So this is just the ability to have a dedicated workstation that will act as a self-check machine, in essence. And after we do that testing and roll it out to these 5 next week, we'll open it up to other campuses as well, so that if this is something that could supplement your activities at your campus with circulation or can help in any other way, we'll be ready to roll that out later this next week. Next week we'll be doing the testing, and then the week after, so early September, I think we'd be ready to roll it out widely. This is in an initial phase, and I just wanted to try to connect some dots, and we'll be trying to put together some more big picture strategy for what we're working on in SUNY Library Shared Services. We know that everyone's getting hit with their budgets pretty hard. And you know, there's not a lot that we can do to mitigate that. But we are trying to help with cost savings as much as we possibly can. We've helped out with reviews of collections to see where cuts could be made with minimizing impact on students and faculty. We've helped with trying to get discounted PDE transitions. And we're trying to do the most that we can with helping you navigate some of the challenging budget times ahead. So with OCLC, we've heard a lot of complaints about how much it costs. Maggie, myself, Susan from our team, we've been looking at alternatives to OCLC cataloging, and with the help of some campuses, we've looked at Sky River as an alternative. And if we were to go all in as a consortia with Sky River, it would save us a lot of money. But I think I'm also not naive enough to think that we could do that in any sort of short time frame or even a 5-year time frame. The larger campuses are very, very connected to being in WorldCat. They need it, and that's the majority of our spend with cataloging. So what we're going to focus doing is to work with campuses who fit the criteria, and this is about 25 campuses, give or take a few, depending on FTE and where you're at when we're at this point with FTE, to look at you as a campus, and if you're under 2,500 FTE, if you have a high cost for cataloging, we're going to reach out to you and say, we think that, you know, it's worth you considering whether you should go to Cat Express. And for some campuses, this is a savings of $5,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000. And really the biggest downfall is that you're going to have to enter your holdings in OCLC and then in Alma. So you'll be duplicating that work. But if you're only buying 100 items, 200 items a year, then that might be worth it for you to, you know, to save $8,000. So the choice is going to be completely yours, but we will be reaching out to you. Honestly, most of the campuses probably never needed OCLC full cataloging in the past. And this is an opportunity for you to get savings year after year after year. A few campuses have moved in this direction already because we were working with them. We wanted to test some things out. We'll be talking with the SLC from a policy perspective to see if there's anything problematic there. You know, I'm part of the problem in that I was part of the group based on information we got from OCLC about how the data sync works and how the OCLC to Alma integration works, where OCLC was presenting that we needed full cataloging. So we put forward a policy that requires full cataloging, and I'm asking the SLC to walk that back to say Cat Express is required. So just know that we're going to look at this as a project like a lot of the others of, we're not just going to say to you, we think you should move to Cat Express. We are going to have a project and people who know what they're doing to work with you as, you know, if you're the director and the one who's the decision maker, you and your staff who are doing the cataloging, receiving, et cetera, to make sure you understand the repercussions and the workflow changes. So just know that this will be coming. We will answer all of the questions that you would have as part of that project. And you won't be able to make this change until June of 2021 because of how the OCLC renewal process goes, but this will be coming. And expect us to do some more things like this, which will focus on cost savings as much as we can possibly provide to you. So in the other direction, I put out a message about EasyProxy that OCLC will begin charging for updates and maintenance at the end of September. That doesn't mean that your EasyProxy will stop working in September. It just means you won't be able to update it any further, at least according to OCLC, and you won't be able to you won't be able to get any support from OCLC. So OCLC has claimed that SUNY Central had provided lump sum payments to them up until 2 years ago. There is no evidence that they've provided that we did that, and there is no evidence that we can find that SUNY ever did that. And we're trying to, you know, ask them why they're making this claim. So they're not asking for any back money, just to be clear, but we're just trying to say, if you make claims like this, please back it up with some sort of evidence, because it's a difference between we forgot to charge you for a year and we are giving you a new cost because of, you know, in essence, an accounting error. Multiple people have emailed me that, you know, SUNY has free lifetime access to EasyProxy because of a useful utilities agreement. I've backtracked that. I've looked through all of our contracts, and we don't have a lifetime maintenance and update agreement. What was in place, and people have sent me 15, 12, 11, 13-year-old emails about this. So it's an issue that's come up over and over again. In previous master agreements with OCLC going back 10, 15 years, that it was in our contract that we did not pay for EasyProxy because of a, quote, useful utilities agreement. There's nothing about any sort of perpetual license in any of our old license or any of our old master agreements with OCLC. There is no language that talks about free OCLC in our current master agreement, and all the other master agreements are expired. So there's really no leg for us to stand on we would be able to say we get EasyProxy maintenance and updates going forward for free. So just wanted to kind of put that out there. If anybody has any new information or a copy of like a Xeroxed useful utilities OCLC perpetual free maintenance license agreement, send it to me, but I don't think it exists. And we've gone through a variety of different channels to make sure that we're not missing anything there. Turn it over to Esta.
Hi, everyone. I just want to give an update on the entire ebook ILL pilot with ProQuest. So if you haven't heard, we will be participating in a one-year pilot that's going to allow us to lend and borrow entire ebooks on the eBook Central platform. There was a Basecamp post and I believe an email to the director's list if you'd like to read a little more about it. Basically, we are going to manage discovery of lendable ebooks via the network zone, and we are going to assist those campuses that participate with developing a workflow for lending and borrowing, whereas the campuses will be handling the actual lending and borrowing processes, and will be expected to provide some feedback to ProQuest during the pilot. So, all of the participating cohorts of this pilot met with ProQuest earlier this week. The cohorts include California State University, the Prospector Libraries in Colorado, the New School in NYU, and us. And so we got to meet the other cohorts and talk to ProQuest about where they're at with this project. So they are currently negotiating with publishers to secure ILL rights for the pilot, and they're also working on the back-end infrastructure that's going to support the lending and borrowing on eBook Central. We are currently contacting campuses about participating. You may have seen an email from Tim Jackson. Tim has been working on that. According to ProQuest, they're anticipating that the actual borrowing lending part of the pilot will start in early spring of 2021. And the focus on this one-year pilot is going to be lending within those cohorts. So we are participating campuses, which will be about 30 campuses. We will be able to lend and borrow with each other any eBook Central books that any of the campuses own in perpetuity, whereas any of the Prospector libraries can lend within their own, and so on and so forth. So I think this is an exciting project, and we're really happy that SUNY gets to have a seat at the table to help drive the development of whole ebook lending, because I think we're all aware that it's the time is ripe for libraries to have a workable solution for that. So, and that's all that I have.
Hey everybody, I just have a couple of update slides for you. So the Primo September release, there weren't a ton of things that are really relevant for us, but the link to the full release notes is at the bottom of the slide. One of the things that they brought up is that there are some changes to my library card, and they say that it'll show consortia activity if a patron has holds or borrowed things from multiple campuses. I feel like that was possible in the past, so I'm not exactly sure how much that will impact us, but it's worth looking into. One of the things that you'll notice in Primo after the release gets implemented is that there's going to be a lookup or a select prompt at the top of the scopes dropdown list. And this is great if you're at a campus that has a lot of scopes. It's going to be easier for patrons to find ones they've used in the past. Or if you have a ton of options for search, you can just start typing and it'll bring it up by name. So that's kind of cool. This next one, this is something that we've been working with the top five group to try to get better matching for view online links, or even for your print fulfillment links when you're getting material coming in through a link resolver. So that is hopefully going to get better. You'll have the option to tell it just to only match on the identifier, like the ISBN or the ISSN, instead of doing a title match. So there is more information in that link there. One of the things I think is great is that Ex Libris mentioned in their Aluna update that they're working with Dequeue to improve accessibility of Primo. So do keep an eye out for changes coming to meet those requirements. And then as far as the October release, that's just going to be a maintenance release, so there won't be any changes to the system. And then for November, there are supposed to be a lot of things happening. I can see in the cases a lot of things are set to be fixed in November. But one of the nice things is that you'll be able to boost your institutional holdings in a search. And that will make it easier to include the SUNY catalog in your everything search if you wanted to do that. We've been trying to encourage that because it will improve resource sharing across the consortium. But this way you could do it without actually losing sight of your own content. You can make it so that that would come up on top. So you can go ahead and go to the next slide. A couple of e-resources things in our support meeting last week. They did say that scale linking, that they do understand why it's working so poorly. It has something to do with the article number in the metadata. And they're supposed to be improving it, and things are going to start happening in September. We don't have any details about when that'll happen. Sometimes content releases come out separately from the actual like Primo or Alma release. So fingers crossed that will be starting to be resolved soon, and I will post in Basecamp once I do have some details. Another change that's coming is in the CDI, a lot of people have asked to have information kind of more like what I think it's either Summon or Serial Solutions. They would tell you what percentage of the content was covered in the search record, so that will be coming, which is nice. It's supposed to become easier to move information between portfolios, such as your POLs. So there was a little flare up of discussion about that on a Basecamp today. So it'll be nice to make that easier. And then I do have the links to the full Alma release notes and also the content release notes, which is good to kind of keep an eye on. So you can go ahead. Also, I just wanted to remind people, we mentioned this very briefly in the CDI presentation I did last week. The SLSS is offering an audit of your CDI activations and basically your electronic collections in general. Yvonne and I have been working on this, and what we do is we do a star search of all of your collections, we export them, and then we kind of go through them just to make sure that they've been either, you know, activated correctly or activated for search correctly. We look for duplication, we look for any kind of availability publishing problems that might be happening. So do please feel free to request that we do this for your institution. It's been really great both for us and for, I think, the people that we're doing this for, just to get a better sense of how the CDI works. It's definitely not intuitive, so it's nice. We do the work and then we set up an appointment with you afterwards to kind of go through and see if you have any questions about that. So do please take advantage of that. And I'm all set. Thanks, Shannon.
Okay, you can go to the next slide, Shannon. I just wanted to remind everyone, if your campus is struggling with providing access to your print reserves or your circulating collection, or you're just looking to supplement some of those high circulation titles with electronic access, let us know and we can help you with that. We're offering to pull a list of high circulation titles limited by location for your campus and do an overlap analysis in Alma and find out if you have any of your subscriptions are providing any access to some of your print titles. We'll also send that data off to ProQuest and or EBSCO, and they will let us know what they have to for you to purchase in E, along with the pricing and the types of licenses. Some of the publishers are offering 50% discount, others are doing 20%. It's sort of a mix. Anyway, so we can turn that around in about a week. It really depends on the publisher. ProQuest has been basically doing a completely automated process that matches on ISBN and turning around those lists to us in about 2 days. ProQuest or EBSCO is doing it a little more manually, which means they're catching more titles that don't have ISBNs, which is great, but it takes a little longer. So if you do plan to purchase from ProQuest, you will need to have an active eBook Central license. Let's see what else. This isn't counting towards your 5 hours. And if you're interested in this, just send us an email ticket and let us know. And we're happy to help. We've done this for about 16 campuses. I think we've returned maybe 7 or 8 of those back to the campuses, and the rest we're waiting for the vendors. So next slide. And then just a few other updates. We are working with ProQuest to finalize the offers that they're going to bring back to us for the shared SUNY-wide DDA via eBook Central. We met with them the other day, and they sort of talked us through their process for getting publishers on board. So they would like us to provide them a list of publishers that we'd like to see in this DDA pool. And then they're going to take that list and go meet with the publishers to sort of negotiate what kind of list price multiplier on the list price they're going to charge campuses. They've done this for other consortia, but I think we're the biggest one. And the understanding that I got from our conversation was that it's sort of a conversation that they have with publishers every time a consortia comes to them. So we've told them that we'd like to start within the next 3 months, start being able to open up the pool. So hopefully we will get moving pretty quickly on that. They seemed confident that they could turn it around within that time frame. And then regarding the multi-vendor RFP, I've reached out to a few of you. Thank you so much for everyone who's provided feedback on the rubrics. We're working on finalizing those, and we have some paperwork that we're drafting for procurement as well. I also wanted to thank everyone who volunteered to be on the RFP review task force. We got a great pool, and I'm going to be contacting those that we selected to be on those groups in the next week or so. So, okay, I think that's all that I have.
Turn it over to you, Tim.
Oh, thank you. I was muted. Sorry about that, everyone. If you could head on to the next slide, please. So physical resource sharing has restarted in Alma as of Monday, August 3rd. To date, we have 27 libraries who have started borrowing and lending in Alma again, and we have 4 more libraries who are slated to resume resource sharing in Alma next week. So for those of you who have yet to resume resource sharing in Alma, the way things will work is I'm keeping an eye on the Empire Library Delivery Courier restart dates everyone is being assigned. And once I see that you've been assigned a restart date, I will reach out to your library's resource sharing contact to see if you're ready to start borrowing and lending in Alma again. It's okay if you're not, but one thing I will ask is if you would like to start borrowing again, we will expect you to lend as well. We can make exceptions if there are some extenuating circumstances. For instance, Geneseo is borrowing but not lending right now because they don't have access to their collection. Also, I just want to let you know that I'll be taking care of all of the configuration work needed to get your borrowing and lending up and running again. So all you need to tell me is when you want to start again, and I'll take care of everything else. I want to also give you all a quick update on what's going on with the New York City ELD hub. I've reached out to ELD. Unfortunately, right now, there's no estimated restart date for that hub. So if you're a library in that hub and you have not been in touch with ELD about when you might want to resume service, please do get in contact with them, because it'll be helpful for them to at least have a rough idea of what you're hoping for. And that will help them give us a better idea of when they might be able to resume service in the New York City area. Next slide, please. So an update on article resource sharing. The August ALMA release included a fix that allowed article download links to be delivered directly to the borrowing library's user. Initially, what would happen is a lending library would fill an article request, and then the borrowing library staff would receive a PDF attachment via email, and they would have to manually send that attachment to the user. But now that this fix has happened, we've been able to implement this new delivery method. So now, as soon as a lending library fills a request, the borrowing library's user receives a download link via email. And that email does come from their own library, which is good. Also, the request is automatically completed on both ends once it's filled by the lender. So from a borrowing perspective, there is no longer any mediation for article requests. They're automatically sent to potential lenders. And once the request is filled, the user receives an email and the request is automatically completed. So the borrowing workflow is a lot more palatable than it was when we first went live with article resource sharing. So if your library thinks you might be interested in testing this, but we're holding off because of those concerns about the borrowing workflow, let us know and I can set up a test for you. Next slide, please. Speaking of article resource sharing, we're working on a pilot project with the Connecticut State Colleges and University System. We're hoping to begin sometime this fall with article borrowing and lending between a select number of libraries in our consortia. CSCU has identified 5 libraries that want to participate, and I'm in the process of lining up participants on SUNY's end. We've also had some tentative discussions about eventually expanding this to books. And furthermore, we've had some conversations with the University of Connecticut, which is not part of the CSCU system. They are potentially interested in getting involved in this project. So that's really good news. So it's a good development, and I will be sharing additional information about how things are going in future updates. Next slide, please, Shannon. I also wanted to give you an update on where things stand with the automated fulfillment network. Just so you know, what an automated fulfillment network does is it allows users to pick up and return items at any library within the network. So it's something we see as being potentially really useful, given that we now have a lot of students who are no longer living on campus and maybe living a lot closer to a different SUNY campus. So what we've done in the sandboxes is we've set up multiple small fulfillment networks because it's unlikely that we'll end up with a single large fulfillment network for the entire SUNY system. It's far more likely that we'll end up with smaller fulfillment networks comprised of just, you know, a select number of libraries. So for instance, we could have a fulfillment network for all of the libraries in the Capital Region, all of the libraries in the Buffalo Region. So that's the direction we're thinking things will go. We need to do some additional testing of the functionality, but once we have a thorough understanding of how these automated fulfillment networks work, we'll start reaching out to campuses about possible participation in a fulfillment network. And the goal is to start small and then gradually expand throughout the 2020-2021 academic year. So that's an update on where things stand with automated fulfillment networks. Next slide, please. Also, there's a couple of resource sharing related things in the September 2020 ALMA release that I want to make sure you're all aware of. First of all, they've made some improvements to the article lending workflow. Right now, what has to happen is when a lender receives an article request, they need to copy and paste the requested article title into Primo and search for it that way. But the September 2020 release The Manage Fulfillment Options function can provide direct links to requested articles if the request has the sufficient metadata and the vendor allows article level linking. So I've started testing this in our sandboxes. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to get it to work yet. So I've submitted a case to Ex Libris. So hopefully we can get this working soon. And once we do, I'll share this info out to all of the libraries who are lending articles in ALMA. Also, the September 2020 release allows for full ALMA and Rapid ILL integration. You'll now be able to process all of your Rapid borrowing and lending requests in ALMA if you want to. I honestly can't imagine any libraries in SUNY taking care or taking advantage of the borrowing integration, mainly because ILLiad's copyright compliance functionality is a lot better. So those libraries would probably want to continue handling their article borrowing requests in ILLiad. But it's possible that Rapid ILL article lending may be more efficient in ALMA than it is in ILLiad. So that's something I definitely plan to test to see if that is the case and if there might be some campuses who would want to take advantage of this integration. So I will be sharing info about that at future updates as well. And next slide, please. And lastly, I just want to let you all know that I've scheduled just a general resource sharing update for Thursday, September 3rd at 3 p.m. I'm just going to talk about a variety of things that have happened since we had to shut down resource sharing back in March. There have been some improvements to ALMA ILLiad integration. There's a minor change we'll need to make to some of our lending workflows. I'll talk a little bit and remind you all of what's going on with walk-in borrowing and a handful of other things related to resource sharing. So if you're interested in attending, the registration link is at the bottom of this slide. And that was everything I had, so thank you.
Hey everyone, Shannon, you can move forward, please. So great news, the local subject heading initiative, the project for changing Library of Congress subject headings that contained illegal aliens and aliens to SUNY local subject headings is complete, phase 1, 2, and 3. So it's been fully integrated and normalization rules for your campuses have all been updated. So anything you're bringing in through OCLC, and I didn't change everybody's importer integration profiles. They'd need to do that at their end, but I did change ones where I saw records coming in with subject headings of that nature. I reached out to the campus to ask if they were fine with me making the changes. So I'm really excited that this is done. It's an important project. And if you'd like to learn more about it, you can check out the LibGuide that is called Change the Subject Project. Next, please. I keep giving this reminder just for any campus who has anything other than their data sync collection set up in OCLC and integrated with ALMA, you need to make sure you've changed the server to the new file exchange servers by September 30th, 2020. The link is also contained in the slide. It's just another reminder, just because it's coming up that next month at the end, it will no longer be able to use the old server. Next, please. All right, so last update, I talked about some issues with OCLC's new processing for data sync collections. One great thing is that they did resolve all the strange matching issues that were happening that were producing hundreds of thousands of new records instead of matching. That piece has been fixed. DDR has cleaned up a lot of those. I'm still working with OCLC to refine the remaining few thousand that have not been DDR'd yet. They do have a list. I have a list of records. I've been watching them, so I know what has been corrected and what still needs to be resolved, but it's being taken care of, so that's great news. Now there's some other things going on with OCLC's data sync collection processing. Since they changed to a new process and they have a new match method, it's creating a lot of mismatches. when we're sending records from AMA to OCLC to be processed. Not to the extent that the original issue was having, but it continues to be problematic. And I've been working with OCLC for a month and a half, meeting almost sometimes more than once a week, but mostly once a week, seeing where we are, seeing how we're going to move forward, how to test and how to refine everything. Unfortunately, as of July 7th, they no longer are just matching on the OCN, the OCLC number. So Ms. Shannon, can you move forward, please? So they're now matching on other fields. So this is why it's become a little problematic. We send full bibliographic records from AMA to our DataSync collections. And with all the testing and the work I've done with OCLC, it is very clear what we're sending is fine from AMA. There's not a problem with our information from AMA that's getting to OCLC. It's happening once it reaches OCLC on the matching side. So instead of just matching on OCN or OCN and title, it is now matching on other fields. So if it's a physical record, it's matching on OCN, the title and material type. So if there's any mismatch in the title or leader field in the AMA record going to OCLC, it tries to match it and it will put your holding potentially on a different record. It doesn't remove your holding on the record that you have the OCLC number on that you sent to them, but it will add this additional holding. And the same thing with like electronic records, it now matches on OCN, title, material type. And if there's an 856 with a second indicator of zero, then it also matches on the 008, and it depends on the record at position 23 or 29. It's quite complicated. So again, if there's any slight mismatch, your holding will remain on the record that you sent to OCL, that you have it in OCLC, but this record that gets sent to the DataSync collection may add your holding to a record that you don't really have. And how I find this out is because new records are coming in through our collection query from OCLC. So we have all the symbols from all the SUNYs. And anytime there's a new record with your symbol on it comes into a new file, gets ingested into AMA through an import profile. And, you know, there should be a very high rate of matching records. So even if a new holding gets added, there should be a high rate of match in AMA's network zone. And there have been quite, there's a lot more, and I look at what comes in, and I can usually tell when it's a campus that adds holdings in AMA manually, I mean in OCLC manually, and then they come and do their work, and then it links, or if somebody updated their holdings because it was in AMA, but maybe it wasn't in OCLC and they did it manually. I can't tell it's done manually, but I can see that a pattern happens. I reach out to OCLC and they tell me it was manually done. But then I can also go in and look because I'll compare the OCLC number that's coming in as new. I'll go look in OCLC and I will check who has the holdings and I'll look at the campus's information and I'll compare. Then if it's not in your AMA instance, I do a title search and other fields to find it. So this is how I'm finding these mismatched records, creating these new records, and adding your holdings. Now, what's really good is that because I've been doing all this testing and looking at that information, that OCLC is able to use that information and we've compared that what's being sent is correct and what is getting matched on matches both of our collections. Like it's matching what I see in AMA and what they're seeing in OCLC. So they'll be able to create a whole list of all of our SUNYs and remove those erroneous holdings once we really get everything refined for the match method. That was a lot, sorry. So then the next issue is, The next issue is that before our DataSync collections allowed us to not publish bibliographic records that didn't have an OCN, didn't have an 035 with an OCLC number in it. But however, this new match method does not allow us to do that anymore. It does not allow us to omit those. So what happens is they're gonna get in, they're gonna go to your DataSync collection, they're gonna try to match. If they match, they're gonna add a holding to a record that you may not ever use or want to use. And these also may be course reserves, right? So they may not really be true holdings. And then if it doesn't match, it doesn't publish. It goes into staging then. So the best practice will be to make sure you set records without OCNs, without OCLC numbers and O35 to don't publish. Now, if you're a campus that has configured your data sync collections not to publish EUV sources, that's still working the same. There is no difference. It's still working as it was. Please move forward, Shannon. Thank you. So some of the things that OCLC has done during this process, they've paused our bib data sync collections, and then we activated 7 collections, just so that there was a controlled testing, that we had the ability to really see what's going on, wasn't overwhelmed by too many records, and could really dive deeper into the process and see what's happening. OCLC started turning on some of the data sync collections again, because we have a better idea of what is going on. And so 3 of the university centers were just turned on. And over the next week or so, the rest of SUNY will be back on. That means that all the files that have been sent to OCLC, to your data sync collection, have been on pause. They've been sitting there. They're all going to process and update your holdings. Now, that does mean that there might be some erroneous holdings that have been created. I am reviewing all of them still and working with OCLC on them. And as I said, they're going to help identify the records and clean them up for us. And then there's an additional thing we can do for e-resources is to exclude records with a second indicator of 0 in the 856 from publishing. So that those are some of the things that we're working towards. Now, some things that I've done to try to mitigate and to reduce mismatches or problems with matching, I removed any migrated data in the MARC 035 that contained our 01 SUNY underscore network that came from migration. And that was like over 5 million records that got cleaned up, no problem. And then removed any non-OCLC numbers in MARC 035. And that's like vendor control numbers or library specific migrated information that happened to come over when campuses linked or you shared with network. So I will just continually do that for the non-OCLC vendors every month. I'll just go in, check to make sure any are there and clean them up as people add things to the network zone. Next, please, Shannon. So because this new process is very complex. I'm going to do a session on Tuesday, September 1st at 10 a.m. so that you can understand more deeply about what happened with this new match method and how to mitigate it on your end and how to improve it. Little things that we can do ourselves to help the process along. And I've also, you know, just to let you know, there is a way. We're trying to reach out with Ex Libris, see if it's possible, if we can have them develop the ability for us to just have files with OCN numbers so that we could actually just match on OCLC numbers, because the only way to do that is by sending them a CSV file with just an OCLC number. So sending a MARC full MARC record, we don't have that ability, but ALMA doesn't have that ability to just send the OCLC numbers at this time. Hopefully we can have that developed, and hopefully from feedback from myself and hopefully other libraries, that they might change their match method so that we can turn off some of the other matching features and just match on the OCLC number like we were previously. And so if you want to know more, or if you're the person who, you know, in resource management, you're the head of cataloging, or you configuration for your campus and maintenance, or you're just interested in this whole process, please register and join. It will be useful and helpful for everybody who works with OCLC records to better understand what is happening. Next, please. So now we're up to our September release notes. As Shannon mentioned, the new user layout, the opt-out option has been pushed to the November release, which is great. There is a link to the new layout libguide that's been created. So if you don't have that link, you can get more familiar with how the new layout works and what it will look like and some of the functionality. Something that's coming out in September as well is this merge and combine inventory job enhancements. And it's really nice because what it's going to do is allow multiple jobs for merge and combine to run at the same time, as long as they have different input input files. And for me, this is really important because when merge records and come in, or even updates when they find matches in the network zone, I have to sometimes do manual merging. And especially that whole DDR process that happened because of cleaning up the OCLC records, it took me like a week to get it done because they couldn't run simultaneously. They run one behind the other, and it just took a really long time to get them done. So it's a nice new feature. At least I know it will benefit the network zone, which will benefit everybody as well. And they've also apparently improved the job performance. So that's good news. Next, please. So there's some acquisitions, new features coming out, vendor controlled PO line renewal. So you can renew your vendor subscription and matching continuous PO lines in AMA. You can enable your vendor to automatically update a PO line once the subscription is renewed on the vendor side. So this is something we've been discussing with EBSCO as an interest, and they're working on developing this. So this is now only available for ProQuest. So you might be interested in investigating this if you have your ProQuest renewal subscriptions. It does require an API key, and they've added in your vendor's details page a checkbox under the system integration tab for renew at vendor system. So when you do get this set up, there's that extra piece, and the documentation, there's more documentation available with Ex Libris. Another thing that they did, this is a fix, is calculation of disencumbrances has been corrected. So they had times when disencumbrances did not disencumber or there was a problem. Apparently this has been fixed. And if you have any cases where you've had disencumbrances not working correctly, please check them and see how they're working with this new correction. Hopefully that has fixed the problems. Next, please. And in the resource management, the big release for resource management is the new metadata editor. Really excited about it. SUNY won't be going fully integrated into the new metadata editor until 2021 because not all the features will be available. However, now the new metadata editor come September will be available for everybody who has cataloging roles to be able to use. And I just did a session on the new metadata editor earlier this week. And if you'd like to know more about the new metadata editor, you can go to our LibGuide and you can review the recordings and documentation. And finally, sorry, Shannon, there's this create itemized set from file support for matching ISBNs or 020 or 022 subfield A. So now you can create an itemized set using ISBNs. And what it's going to do is it's going to automatically match on subfield A and Z. So if you only want to match on subfield A of those fields, you need to make sure the headers are indicated as follows below. And those are the release notes for September. There's a lot of other things, so please review it because there's other corrections and fixes and other things that may be of interest. Thank you.
All right, just a quick overview, and I know we're almost at time. We have some more sessions coming up. Just look at the LibCal, and that will give you a sense of what we're providing. One thing that's new is that we'll have more advanced acquisitions, so 4 free webinars and a series coming in October and November. And then Maggie's MD Editor resource management sessions are already underway. We'll plan on some new layout sessions and then also some sessions on collections that will be coming in the fall and winter. And happy to announce that Elena's excellent course will run again on e-resource management and the ERM lifecycle in Alma Primo. There is registration cost for this. Let us know if there's an issue that you cannot pay and this is essential for you to be successful. We can work with you a bit on that. The registration ends on September 21st. Jennifer, you want to end it here?
Yeah, one last note right at the deadline. Save the date, please, for the SLC fall virtual meeting. It'll be afternoons only, and we're going to do something a little different for 2020. We're going to do December 7, 8, 9, and more details will follow. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Any question? We don't have too much time, but just wanted to see if there's any clarification needed on anything that we talked about. Okay, I'll stop recording.